Hey guys, it's Justin here. We're going to get to the podcast in just a second. Today, Carter and I talked about the Lakers winning a championship and what this title means for both LeBron's legacy, this season, and a whole bunch of other good things. But before we get to the podcast, I just want to talk about a new podcast for Blue Wire. Abner Mares is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, a dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Mares, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and the man he is today. On the show, they will chat about topics like the state of boxing, Abner's journey from a kid on the streets to a boxing champion, sports, music, culture, and family life. He just dropped a podcast with LL Cool J that I think you guys will want to check out. Listen to On the Hook with Abner Mares wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English are out on Tuesdays, and episodes in Spanish are out on Wednesdays. And now, to our show.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again.
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton. Some rhythm.
And he got it. Young ball continues to wear him out.
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The 2019-2020 season is finally over, damn it. The Lakers are champions. LeBron won a fourth ring. And to help talk about all of that good stuff and the, I guess, to put a bow on this season and talk about what's next is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good. It's off-season season, baby. It's nice to know that everyone else is just like the Cavs at this point.
Yeah.
everyone's 0-0.
Everybody's losers, except for the Lakers. Everybody else didn't have a winning season, and it's even worse if you made the finals and lost. Jimmy Butler's career may never recover from this.
Well, you know, it's a finals loss is a tough thing to recover from a legacy perspective, as far as I can tell. So, you know. 0-1 in the finals, so you know 0% winning percentage in the finals kind of makes you wonder if Jimmy is a fraud. You know, I we often have the discussion, Robert Horry or Jimmy Butler.
Yeah,
career.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I saw the comment on Twitter, and I really shouldn't look into Twitter for this sort of thing, but someone commented, "Well, if Jordan made 10 finals, he'd have a better record than that." And I was like,
try making them.
Yeah. Do you think the finals are invite only? Like, what's going on there? But I don't want to go down that path. So we recorded after game four, but before the weekend. And I got to tell you, man, game five, where Miami got the win, where they absorbed LeBron's best punch, that impressed the living hell out of me. Like, LeBron does not lose.
Impressed. That both of us were sick, man.
I was sick. I mean, I was worried. I thought it was all going to fall apart. I'm still, like, I'm used to LeBron going down, tightening his shoelaces, and being okay. I'm not used to what the recovery time and what recovery looks like for Anthony Davis. So even though I wasn't as invested as I guess I thought I was going to be in the Lakers winning, I was still concerned because I did not
want LeBron to blow. You must have quickly gotten invested because you seem miserable on Sunday night.
I just didn't want him blowing a 3-1 lead. I really didn't want him blowing a 3-1 lead.
It's fair. Yeah, I don't know, man. I was sick for LeBron. I really thought Miami had, you know, because really, you know, if you had looked at it, game three, Miami outplayed them. Game four, you could argue Miami kind of outplayed them.
They gave that one away at the very least. Yes. I think that was a winnable game for them.
So the other one way to interpret is, okay, the Lakers survived a fluky loss. But the other way is like, uh-oh, Miami's kind of outplayed them three games in a row, even though they've only, you know, won two of them. and like rut-row Reggie, and it just kind of ended up going the other way where we kind of realized very quickly that the Heat had given everything they had to give, and then the Lakers put on one of the most masterful defensive first halves I've ever seen, where they just completely shut their water off, which is what we thought was going to happen once Dragic went down. And yeah, it was a shit kicking. And thank God that LeBron didn't have to deal with two all-time gaffes leading to devastating finals losses.
Yeah, I think so. I experienced this. I'm curious how you reacted to them winning the championship. I don't know how much of it was the bubble where it just doesn't feel as real, but like it was kind of like a okay, good. They're winning this championship, but I wasn't really joyful as a result of it. Like I don't know, man.
I had this discussion with some friends and just some like not NBA Twitter buddies, and like, I mean, did you feel like that at the end of game five as Danny Green's shot was going up, or does it feel anticlimactic because of how it happened?
I certainly think how it happened is a big part of it. Like, we had 2.5 quarters to process everything about the Lakers winning. Like, at that point, it was basically over. I mean, I know diehard Miami fans that basically went to bed at halftime. Like, it was
well. That's not unlike a Miami fan to call it quits before the game is decided.
Did you see how many? Like, I made the Twitter joke, but there were so many virtual seats that emptied in the second half.
I didn't notice that.
It was really funny. Like, people thought I was just shitting on Miami fans, but it legitimately was happening. And you know what? Like, I would not want a webcam in my face if that was happening to the Cavs. Like, in their defense, like, I'm not sitting there for another hour and a half being like, hey, I might be on national TV a little bit.
I'm glum as fuck.
Dude, I'm pulling the hell out of there.
Yeah, I don't blame any Miami fans that hung it up on this one. I mean, ultimately, I felt like it was a little underwhelming, but just by design, you know? Like, I mean, I couldn't believe how hard my heart was pounding at the end of game five. Like, I was standing up watching.
I will admit to that.
And I was like, man, this is just, it felt so important. It's crazy, actually, that it didn't end up mattering at all, you know? I will say, you know, this has long been a Danny Green household, of the Danny Green Believer Club. Like, I just love that guy. I think he should be remembered as one of the great role players of his era. And I'm not sure he will be, because he had, at the end of that San Antonio run, like, something had clearly gone amiss with him and Pop. I don't know if you remember that, where Pop like was happy to throw him in. And then he ran a little hot and cold in Toronto in the playoffs. And then this year, I'm pretty sure he's just kind of washed up. I mean, he's old.
Dude, I'm always going to think of 2013 and 2014 when I think of Danny Green.
Same.
He was one of the best transition defenders of all time. And
against one of the best transition teams of all time, and him actively fucking up. Like, I can't.
Through three games, we were talking about Danny Green finals MVP in 2013.
Like, I don't think people understand how insane Wade and LeBron 2-on-1s in fast breaks were. But he was blowing them up. It was ridiculous. I just think he is the true 3-and-D prototype. People act like he's not a good jump shooter because he's a little streaky. I think he's actually one of those guys who almost suffers from his reputation, where it's like, I think he shot like 37% from three this year. Like, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good number on a decent volume. But like, he was
no KCP, but he was pretty good.
Yeah. No kidding. Like, he's one of those guys who I feel like has almost like a Korver level reputation, but like a really, really elite shooter reputation. And like, it almost plays against him when he misses open threes.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just really love that guy. I think he's such a winner. And, I think I'm really glad that he had a nice game six, and that I thought the anger towards him was really misdirected and weird. Like, even throwing aside the death threats, like he missed the three. Markieff Morris voids his bowels at the free throw line, and somehow it's Danny Green's fault that they lost.
Yeah,
I was really thrown off by that.
Yeah, I thought LeBron crossed the line with the death threats towards him, but
stop.
It was. I mean, this championship was a win for the Cavs development. You have four former Cavaliers winning a ring here. You got to love seeing that. I'm curious about this. So, I want to acknowledge this because we are a Cavs podcast primarily, and I think one of the areas you and I differ is kind of our relationship with LeBron, like. I'm a fan of LeBron. I'd probably identify him as probably my favorite player, but at the same time, I've kind of gone over it. Like it's a different relationship post-decision and everything. And I know you had concerns with him going to the Lakers that this was going to be a really depressing ending and chapter for him. Was there like a sense of closure that, okay, at least there is a success in this LA chapter? Like no matter what happens from here on out, all three stops getting a championship. It feels like there's some closure with that. Did you experience that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there was this idea of like, this is a person. Yeah. I remember right after he left and the Lakers were a mess. They didn't sign anyone. And I remember us talking about it and me saying like, I just think he's gonna like, you know, I was very nervous on his behalf that his career was going to end with him getting booed on his home floor, you know, where yeah. He just wasn't good enough anymore. And he went to a fan base that neither loved him nor, you know, had that level of intrinsic respect because of the, you know, the relationship between Kobe and him and, you know, all that baggage. And I was like, with all that baggage, like if this doesn't go well, it's going to get ugly. And honestly, I feel like we had a sneak peek into that last season when he breaks Michael Jordan's he tops Michael Jordan on the all-time scoring list. Should have been a really, really important moment. And it was depressing. It was like the fans hated him at that point. The team was terrible. And it was like, oh no, it's like all of my worst fears for how that tenure was going to go were coming true. And then, you know, this summer Anthony Davis comes and the whole slate is wiped clean. I don't even think people are going to remember that first year.
Yeah, they won't dwell on it the same way because I think it also helps from a reputation standpoint that he did ultimately end up getting hurt that season. And even though he tried to play towards the end of the year, it's not a given. The one thing I'll say is as much as everything looked over last year, I wouldn't go into the future projecting that this is going to last forever. Even though LeBron doesn't look like there is any sign of him slowing down, there is just an ungodly amount of miles on his body. Yes, the Lakers are going to have more flexibility this offseason. They might come back with a better team, but I don't think we should be taking anything for granted. And I do think to some extent, while LeBron has helped play a role in creating the modern media atmosphere where the NBA is a daily topic, like Zach Lowe has talked about this, a whole bunch of other guys saying, hey, I have careers because he brought interest in the NBA to this level. And people are getting rich, either taking his side or going against him on every single issue. But at the same time, like I just feel like we're going to look back at his career and be like, we, instead of always measuring him on the all-time list, we should have done a better job of enjoying him in the moment. And I did feel like there were times where I just got to really marvel this playoff run at, wow, he still does have this gear. Even though he's more balanced, he's playing defense now, which he wasn't really doing at the end of the Cavs tenure, the offensive ceiling isn't quite as high. Like the bounce back, he's not giving you 40 every single night, but he's still able to get to that gear and he's still able to be worthy of the finals MVP. Like he erased that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I think it's easier when he's not on your team, to be honest, to just enjoy him because like the drama is just funny and stupid.
There is a lot of baggage that comes with it, that's for sure.
And like when he's just, you know, when you're just watching him as a, you know, not impartial observer, because I think both of us were rooting for him to succeed,
yeah,
to varying degrees. But yeah, it's way easier to marvel at him. You know, I do think that, you know, you did mention like, yeah, there's no guarantee of this happening long term, but I will say to my, you know, original fears, when you win a title anywhere, even a place that's won as many as LA, I do think that fundamentally changes the relationship a player has with his fan base.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, think about how many players for us are Teflon forever,
yeah,
because they won us a title.
And I think Kobe passing this year and giving Lakers fans that is going to be something that is cherished among the fan base.
Yeah, which, you know, like, I know everyone gets really mad about people bringing up Kobe with regards to, like, the Lakers, but it's like, come on, like, that's an organization and fan base that went through some trauma this year, and they got something great at the end of it. And
yeah, honestly, Sedano sold me on that more. Like, sure. I found it more cringeworthy, but when he kind of elaborated on it, and it wasn't just like a soundbite, that was something that it resonated with me. I was like, okay, you know what? That really does make a lot of sense.
So I've generally noticed this as a wide angle take, is that we've gotten so poisoned against any media outlet at this point that when they just ask questions or talk about interesting stories, like, I just see like a hefty group of people like freaking out about it as all pushing the narrative crap. Like, yeah. Like, I don't know if you saw the interview where Rachel Nichols, after the Heat made the finals, Rachel asks Spo about playing against LeBron, and they're like, oh, they're already pushing the narrative on ESPN. I'm like, what? This is a fucking really interesting story. What, are you fucking stupid?
They never should have taught people the word narrative. They're
like, it's just like, so I just think we're at this point, and like, even like, I saw a bunch of Heat Twitter people complaining like that ESPN posted a series of graphics like the King coronation, whatever, as he, like, you know, heading into game five as he looks to win. Like, oh, I can't believe that a media outlet that whose job is to sell interest in the game is talking about the stakes for the second or first best player of all time winning his fourth ring. I can't believe that. It's like everything's a fucking conspiracy now. And right. It's so irritating because it's like there's just no connective tissue can be found. And like, sure, there's some cringy shit. Like saying LeBron should win MVP because he had to deal with Kobe. Like that's
gross.
You know,
yeah,
it's a little gross. But like, you know, like, it's, we're just so binary at this point where no, the media, the ESPN and Turner can't have a single fucking thing to say about anything, or it's this big vast conspiracy. It's like, they're just trying to tell interesting stories here.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And speaking of kind of things that are being pushed, like, there is a whole, oh God, like, the reseeding conversation has come up. The, oh, other teams would have given the Lakers a bigger push. First of all, Denver beat the Clippers, which everyone thought was going to win the title, or not everybody, but the majority of people thought the Clippers were going to win the title. Lakers beat them in five games. The Heat pushed the Lakers further than any other team. They beat Milwaukee, who had the best record in the league. People did this with the 2018 Cavs, where they're like, oh, Boston would have given them the Warriors a better series, or so-and-so would have given them a better series. Then they would have fucking beat the Cavs. Like,
seven games is a pretty big sample, guys.
You got to actually win to make it there. And sure, you can say that, okay, this is a better matchup, especially when it isn't like a Warriors level town. Like, I think if you look at the last 20 years, the Lakers are probably in the bottom half of overall talent when it comes to championship winning teams, even though they have so much high end talent. But like, if Daniel Tice could turn Siakam into Storm Al Swift, what do you think Anthony Davis is going to do? Like,
yep.
Like, it's great to say, well, if we got regular season Siakam, well, the pressure cooker of the playoffs is kind of an important thing, and it wasn't going to get easier against a better defensive team with more length.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just think people like that are honestly kind of just like, they're just falling into the camp of like people for whom it is profitable to shit on Lakers' paths to titles in a way they would never do for those that they're interested in supporting. And, you know,
sorry to cut you off, but how do you feel about the path that they took? Because I think now that the bubble has wrapped up, one, we got to give the league a lot of credit for none of the players getting COVID. Like, that is sure. A massive accomplishment and not something like, I thought they were going to be able to finish the season. I thought some guys were going to get it. Obviously there were staff working within the bubble that did, and I don't think we should minimize that, but they were able to pull this off, and I think that was important. But now that we've seen the entire product, what's kind of your thoughts and takeaway there
from the bubble itself?
Yeah, like the path, like how different the bubble was than regular playoffs. Like, what is kind of your gut feeling with it?
So I miss fans. I did miss fans. I think they did as good of a job. You know, I was thinking about this, and the NBA's biggest advantage here is actually structural. You know, like we always talk about how the NFL, their biggest advantage compared to the other leagues is structurally they can't play much more than 16 games. Mm-hmm. So they've managed to eventize those 16 weekends where, you know, they just own those weekends because there's only so many games. So you're never not going to tune in if you're a fan. Right. You know, if NFL could play 82 games, they would, because that's money. But like, but they choose not to because of the way the game is structured. I think the NBA has some structural advantages in a COVID world. One, everyone knows what it's like to hear to play pickup and hear that kind of everyone knows what pickup energy has, like in a highly competitive pickup game. So it kind of apes that. And then you also have the fact that, you know, NFL is still going to be played in big, big honking stadiums that are going to be full of empty seats. Baseball, same. Like, it's not like anyone, there are very many baseball stadiums that have any different vibe than a pro baseball stadium. NBA was lucky in the sense that a court, you can kind of build and produce however you want in whatever space you want. So they were able to shrink down. They were able to condense our experience into a smaller space physically. And it basically, instead of, you know, when you watch NFL right now, it's just like 10% worse across the board because you don't have this crazy fan experience. Whereas when you watch when you watch bubble basketball, in my opinion, what you got was something 15 to 20% different. It was just a different product. And, you know, I work in production in the esports space, and, you know, we do a lot of live events too. And, you know, the big thing I keep saying to, you know, all my peers with the way we need to approach broadcasts is we can't make it feel like we're just trying to account for what we've lost. We need to find new things to celebrate and new energies and, you know, make a whole new product. And I think that's what the NBA did. I don't think they meant to the extent that they did. I think that they sort of stumbled into it to some extent just because of the structural advantages of, you know, the confines of a basketball court as opposed to a 100-yard, you know, football field. But I do think that's why it worked, and that's why everyone had so much fun watching it.
Yeah, I think those are really good thoughts. And as always, I appreciate your perspective as someone that is geared towards thinking about the production value and all that. And I think from a quality of play standpoint too, like, it was really high. Like, I think that there's things that
we makes you think about, that we should fix some death of field problems.
Yeah, definitely that. I think seeing the difference no travel made was big. One of my big takeaways with LeBron winning is he's got more miles than anybody else on his body. And I think one of the biggest tests of the bubble was there just really wasn't a lot of recovery time. There wasn't downtime. There wasn't breaks between series. And the fact that he was able to outlast everybody blows me away. Like, I think that's a real, real testament to what he's been able to accomplish in his career. And I think him getting to four rings and being past any of his peers is really important from a legacy standpoint too. Like, I don't think it's really going to change a whole lot of people's minds, because I think everyone was kind of, they had their minds made up after 2016 on where they fall in the debate. But I do think it is significant for him to finish with more rings than Steph or KD or any of the Kawhi, any of his other kind of contemporaries. And
I will say this with regards to that. I think that what's noteworthy about him isn't just that he doesn't get hurt and that he's available. And I think one thing that we'll likely remember with LeBron is that he never got tired. Like, the fact that he could go 5, 6, 7 games into a series, play 48 minutes and be fine. You know, like, Jimmy was out of, I forget what podcast I was listening to. Maybe it was Simmons. Either way, they kind of talked about how, you know, Jimmy plays that, all that, like, Jimmy and LeBron just kill themselves in game 5. In game 6, Jimmy comes out completely dead and LeBron's like, no, I'm ready to do this again.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the difference. Jimmy has a 40-point game. Like, he had two massive games and kind of imploded and collapsed the following game. The fact that LeBron didn't is crazy.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing we'll remember. I think more than anything, you talking about the legacy and the debate, of course, And I think that after 2016 to me was the title where the conversation stopped being disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, now we can go on both either side. And now it's just kind of Coke or Pepsi, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this a lot. And, you know, maybe the extent to which those on the Jordan side of the argument are so aggressively unwilling to humor it. Whereas I don't know very many LeBron fans are just like, fuck Jordan. He's not shit compared to LeBron. Maybe that in itself is enough evidence to kind of tilt the scales towards Jordan. But, mm-hmm. you know, to me, like, I just think like it's just more and more evidence that LeBron is great in his own way. And in a way that, you know, only the true singular super duper 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 stars are. I think in a lot of ways it would probably be incorrect. And I think the reason Jordan wins so much in these general debates is we actually measure GOAT by the Jordan standard
mm-hmm.
at this point. And we measure them against, and when I say that, I mean specifically by what made Jordan the GOAT.
Yeah.
Not just his overall resume, but his specific traits, his inevitability, his killer instincts, his clutchness, like that, like everything we measure GOAT by is kind of just like the things we thought made Jordan the GOAT. And maybe 30 years from now, we are unfairly holding these, you know, the next super duper duper star to the standard of LeBron of never, ever getting hurt and playing 20. If they flame out after 13 seasons, maybe they're not, you know, maybe we're harsher on them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you got to shoulder an ungodly load for 17 years. I mean, it's crazy.
I just wonder
if that he's had. And like, I don't know about you, Carter, like when I'm looking at like myself, we're understaffed right now. I'm shouldering a massive load at work. And I know that's a thing that's going on everywhere, which is why Indeed has us covered, because they will help you with all of your staffing needs. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed gives you powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Right now, go to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
Well, Justin, I know that you've been carrying a lot of burden at work lately, and you know, but I'll always bet on you to kind of get through it and figure things out. And if you'd also like to bet on the things you believe in, well, Justin, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be in a game this year, but you can still be on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team player and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
So I think we can both agree that in terms of difficulty of opponent, this is probably fourth in LeBron's all-time championships. But I think the interesting conversation to have is...
Oh, I thought you meant fourth out of all of them, like including the losses. And I was like, they might be 10th.
Yeah, no, absolutely. but I think the interesting conversation is where it ranks in terms of importance, like legacy. And to me, I think Cleveland is always going to be number one. We are the only championship he cried after winning. So I'm going to put a lot of stock into that. I'm not jaded or cynical enough to dismiss that at this time. After that, I think it becomes between this one as kind of like a showing I can still do it. Because I think your point is correct, where nobody's going to do it exactly like Jordan did. But I think LeBron aging gracefully like Duncan, where he's still winning championships, even in other versions of himself, that's something very, 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 very few superstars are able to do and would be really meaningful. So I think him starting that trend, winning in LA, winning after Kobe's death, I think this is right up there with his first one in Miami, which would leave probably the second best opponent he beat as fourth in terms of like importance.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that to me, OKC is definitely up there as kind of the first, as the first title he won, because like, I don't think people will remember that it was actually like, and you know, you got to consider that I was in peak, not a LeBron fan mode at that point. And I was just like, there was legit discussion about like whether he had the mental fortitude to do it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So he did that. So I think that's got to be number two after 2016. In my opinion, I think the way that Spurs series played out, I think that's, so the reason I put that above this Miami one is, one, I think Miami was just this, you know, the 2020 Miami Heat, especially sans Dragic and with a hurt Bam, it was not a big enough competitor. And I believe that the 2013 Heat Spurs 7-game series is the best basketball I've ever watched.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best series of basketball I've ever seen. Just complete, you know, nirvana on both ends for both teams the whole way. And like, I think that's why I put a little more importance on that, because it's like, that is the peak of basketball as I know it. And he and his team figured out a way to win. But you know, I certainly think it's debatable between those two. I think in terms of what I did for legacy, this one is probably more valuable in the long haul, but it almost feels like the next one he wins will supersede a couple other ones if he wins another one.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. Like, it's, man, it's going to be interesting if he ends up getting to five or six. Like, that's really going to be something.
I mean, let's just ask the question real quick. Do you think he's going to win another title, or is this it?
I think he finishes with five. I like, that's kind of my gut instinct. I'm betting.
You know, it's funny. My gut kind of goes the other way. I think he might, this might be it.
Yeah.
And the reason my gut goes that way is that I think that ultimately there's going to be like, I do not think he's going to have a gradual decline. I think there will be a cliff.
Mm.
And whenever that cliff comes, you know, like he might only have two seasons left to win one more, you know?
I only think that cliff comes if it's by injury.
Really? Like, I don't know, man. Sometimes these guys just get old out of nowhere, you know?
But, like, I still think that there's versions of him that he can go to. Like, the passing is going to age so well that he can realistically win one as a third or even fourth scoring option.
Yeah, like, I think it really depends on...
Which I don't think a lot of guys can do that. Like, I think that's a feather in his cap.
Yeah, but I also don't think, I'll say this as well, I don't think he's going to be very interested in being a role player at any point of his career. You know, like, the greats like this are never like, oh, well, I'll just be the fourth option. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think they're wired that way. And like even if he, and I'm talking about even like not just the scoring averages, but like, you know, the general vibes of the team where mm-hmm. he's going to end up. I don't know. I just feel like that's someone who's going to get out before it gets ugly.
Yeah. I'd be more inclined to agree with you if Bronny wasn't coming down the pipeline.
That's a great point. And honestly, I think the biggest thing for me is AD going to become, you know, like, you know, we argued about this on the last podcast where I kind of said, I don't think that guy is a, you know, a basketball savant the way that I think you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if that guy grows into, you know, because again, he's young as shit, and this is really the first high level basketball he's ever played at the professional level, where he had to be great in a lot of different ways. Like, if he takes another leap, then I, you know, all bets are off. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If I had to put a percentage on it, I'd say like 55% that I think LeBron won't win another title, 45% that he will. So yeah. I'm not being too negative here.
No. That's fair. I mean,
it's hard to win titles, man.
I was going to make a joke. Who makes the finals next? The Cavs or LeBron?
Cavs and LeBron.
Yeah, how about that? That would sure be something. It'll be interesting. I mean, so much is dependent on what they're able to do. They're going to have a fair amount of cap space and not a great free agency class. But I think one thing he has going for him is there is at this stage of his career some magnetism where he's able to go get guys. He's able to get guys that are willing to be part of the system and that want a chance to win a championship. So I guess it depends on how they're able to round out the roster, how good the Clippers are able to be, if Ty Lue makes a difference there, if he ultimately gets that job. But you know what? I'm just happy to see that this season did end in a ring for them. It was a good way to wrap things up. The title felt real too. Like, did you feel like this was an asterisk season? Like, I think
of course not.
I think there's an asterisk on absolutely every single season because there is context that is necessary when discussing champions. But this felt legitimate. Like, I think the only result that I think would change if this wasn't played in the bubble is I don't think Miami gets by Boston. And part of that was because Tyler Hero was hurt at the end of the year and he clearly took a leap beyond just getting healthy. But like, I thought Miami was going to beat Milwaukee. I thought Denver was going to beat the Clippers. Like these were results that didn't necessarily surprise me, even if I chickened out on my Denver bet.
I was about to say, when the fuck did you say that?
I have screenshots. I have shared this in the Discord. I said it in February that the Nuggets would beat them, but that Clippers team just hated themselves. They hated everyone. And like the fact that like, I think it was a test in a different way, but it was a level playing field. And there was enough of a sample size that determined who got into the playoffs that with these teams playing on a level playing field, it felt legitimate to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. Ultimately, I think that it was obviously legitimate. I think that we might have collectively maybe felt a little different if Miami had won.
100%. I would have thrown the shit in the trash.
but you know, the fact that they didn't, I remember we said this right before the bubble even started that I wanted it to go a little chalk at least at the, you know, by the end, because mm-hmm. that was going to make it feel the most legitimate. I feel like every star who, you know, took a leap in the bubble, feels like I definitely had my, you know, my perception changed of some players. You know, I think Jamal Murray is a super superstar in a way that I didn't prior. Mm-hmm. I think Luka is, you know, cemented his place as a super duper star.
Big time like that.
Jesus Christ. And like, I just think, yeah, I think all the lessons we took from this bubble are going to hold. I think we're going to realize that Mike Budenholzer, I mean, if you didn't already, Mike realized how broken Mike Budenholzer's systems are in the postseason. I think that, you know, Heat culture and that fucking team will, I think they could have a Pistons-esque run where they're just in the conference finals 5 years in a row. I think the Clippers, we knew they had problems. Those problems revealed themselves aggressively. Like nothing that we learned from this bubble, I think, like feels like we're gonna quickly unlearn it, you know?
Yeah, and I won't say that it renewed my interest and love of the NBA, but it kind of amplified it. Like it reinforced what I thought, that 1 and 2 star teams will open up the playing field
and they'll be fun as shit to watch.
Yeah, and the league is back to a point where matchups really matter, seeding really matters, and
coaching matters.
You look there were so many teams that could have made it to the conference finals and a lot of teams that were a bounce away from making a run, and the bad teams in the league all have really interesting young players. I think the NBA is in a really, really great spot, and I miss it. I hope it's it comes back sooner rather than later. I think there's actually a decent chance that it does, because I think they've seen the negative effects of running up against football, and they will avoid that at all goddamn costs. Uh-huh. And starting tomorrow, we got the road back, the Cavs documentary series. So I'm fucking amped for that. So
before we start to wrap here, I did want to kind of talk about how I remember at the end of last season, we were talking in the offseason about how we needed this year as like a post KD Warriors palate cleanser, and it was going to be a weird year.
Mm-hmm.
And think about all of these fresh narratives and storylines that that we're going to be able to build on and have fun with for the next couple of years. You know, rivalries were established and stars were born, and this is exactly the kind of season the NBA needed. Even if it's just a transitional year, we needed this transitional year to launch the next era of NBA basketball in the post Warriors landscape, post KD Warriors landscape.
I'm really glad you brought up that point, because it's once again reminding me of a correct take that I had, which is what I'm really here for this podcast. This is the whole reason behind doing this, is putting my takes in audio form, recording them so that
nobody
can remember a goddamn thing. Anyways, we'll wrap up on that point. I'm excited. The draft should have been Thursday. It's not. I guess it actually should have been Friday, which is weird. Adam Silver may have passed the COVID test, but he failed the putting a draft on a Thursday test. But we're about a month away, so we'll have plenty to talk about there. We got the Cavs documentary series. I'm pumped about that. But I'm going to let Carter go because, I mean, family and responsibilities and life. So big thanks to all our listeners. Thanks to Carter. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of our exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. We will definitely be talking about the Cavs documentary series in there. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you're staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.